Inseparable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
And good evening to all our admirable friends out there.
Good evening. Tuesday night.
It is Tuesday night.
It is here. Good evening.
We got.
You know, I have a smile on my face every time I hear that intro song. I always feel so happy when I hear him. Why, is that corny? Is that why you're laughing at me?
No, I'm not.
Why?
I guess if we're in full admittance here, I was kind of moving my hand like a conductor with the song as it was going.
I just love listening to it. It makes me feel good.
Well, so. It's a time to talk at levels that we're not normally talking at.
Well, we're shifting the conversation on a Tuesday night with our admirable friends. It's a little bit different than the ho-hum water cooler donut talk we get during the day.
And tonight we're really shifting.
Okay. You know how last week I said, what did we do last week? It was equanimity. And I said, oh, this is a real barn burner. Yeah. Well, tonight we have a genuinely authentic barn burner. This is going to be a cool one tonight.
Yeah, we're talking about wanting and craving. Basically, that includes all human desire. So it's a big, big topic.
And the thing was...
And it's role and stress, by the way.
Yes, but we were originally going to start back at the 10-week and talk about determinations and everything, but it was because we had such an interest this week on cravings, wants and cravings and things like that, we thought it would be a great topic to bring up on the radio station.
Yes, and it's... well, to start with, we had the... And we kind of worded the blast email to everybody to solicit information from them. To give us examples of wants and cravings.
Was it a trick question?
Kind of, because it's really, I guess, matters of degree, would you say, Alex?
Yeah, I would. It took me a second to kind of look at it, and I think, and then I came back to you and I said, now be straight with me here, because we can go one direction from these answers, or what if I know you correctly, there was no answer to this question, or it was a trick question. And those usually solicit a lot of good responses, and I think we got some good ones in.
Yes, we did, and it's a great topic because normally, you know, when we feel stress, you know, we feel it, right? And it's usually quite a ways down the road after the causation happened, after what caused it. And we're going to kind of use as a working example tonight that our stress is caused by cravings. And in fact, I kept saying, cravings equals stress. So it would cause us to look further back because we're essentially having to look through the rearview mirror when we feel stressed to say, what just happened here? How did this occur? So we have to get to the cravings. Another word for that craving would be excess wanting or, although one of our writers really makes a nice case of wants versus craving. So Alex, we'll let you take that later on. But we'll have to get to, the want versus crave argument, and but generally, there's a whole bunch on this subject, and it really is going to require us to put our thinking hats on, that discernment, where we can really think about. We're obviously not trying to consider removing human desire.
Not at all.
It's not the objective here. However, that's not to say, in the other end of the spectrum, that all human desire is good. and it would produce good results for us, especially when we consider it in line of our overall objective.
And like anything else, it's skillful. It's a choice between skillful or not skillful.
And not skillful, correct. So, but before we get to the body of it, why don't we go through our generosities and acts of generosity and appreciations as well as gratitudes.
Can I stop you before
sure.
we get going here?
Absolutely.
And those that are listening, if they want to text in or chat in or call in,
yeah,
or
the text
how are they
line
do that
is bbsradio.com/admirablefriends. And if they want to email us, it's hello@admirablefriends.org. And of course, if they want to call, get to Admirable Friends, bbsradio.com/admirablefriends. And there's a telephone number there that you can call. And then there's also, in fact, why don't I, because this is the type of subject that we just might have somebody that that wants to call in. So to call in and interact live would be 888-627-6008. You can also listen to the BBS radio right on the internet with the player they have there, or alternatively, they actually have an app, BBS Radio, where you can listen in to the app.
And we do send the topic of the evening out in a blast email. So how can people receive that? Maybe some of them.
Yeah, if you're not on our blast email list and you're not getting prompted of the subject matters in advance, also send us hello@admirablefriends.org and request to get on the email list. It is growing. We're getting good participation.
And it's anonymous. So, I mean, if you write something back via email, we confidentially,
sure.
X out your name, but we share it with everybody because we want to be able to share the first-person experience so that everybody can benefit from the learning.
Exactly. Okay, let's start the show with the some generosities. Carol, you want to start?
Let's see. Under a public act of generosity, somebody wrote in attending a last-minute volunteer meeting, and the reflection on this action was it wasn't not a convenient time, but a good cause. So,
okay. I see one here taking over the evening household duties to free up time for my partner, and the reflection on that action was getting a break from the routine in a stress-free way can be very healthy.
Nice.
I got one here. Checking on a friend to see how she is doing since her father is in the hospital. I care about her and I want her to know she has support if she needs it. That's very nice.
That is a nice thing to do.
Yeah. Took care of my grandson for a morning. Reflection on this action. I suppose there was a trade. He is terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. How about some appreciations?
Here we go.
Again, appreciation is, by the way, when we think of acts of generosity, I think so much we often think of the physical acts of giving, but we have to think of the intangible acts of generosity as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And not overlook these things, acts of good, of thoughts being sent people's way, the act of...
We usually get pretty reactive with our own generosity to ourselves. It's usually when we get to a point of where things have bubbled up and you kind of say, well, I need to do something for myself. But, there's nothing wrong with doing it when things are going fine or,
yes.
Things are just, like any other day. It doesn't have to be the end of the world to finally start giving to yourself.
Yes. Just remember that we're talking about, tangible gifts, thoughts, words, or actions. It's a generous when you help educate somebody. When you, Alex, when you're growing your children up, each day there's acts of generosity going on.
I'm thinking to myself as I said that, did I just give my wife a license to go buy some new purse or shoes? I was referring more to the intangible giving to ourselves.
To be very clear. It doesn't take much. It could be nonverbal. It could be a smile, just kind of a nod. Making contact with somebody, just even when you're walking down a hall to acknowledge them.
Right, but I'm talking about the gifts of safety, helpfulness,
mm-hmm.
Knowledge,
oh, yeah.
forgiveness. These are all acts of generosity. You know, justice, you know. So there's acts going on that, again, the more we can bring them into our mind's eye, the more we're taking ourselves out of that taking mode and really reaching into the heart side instead of just that wanting, which is the subject matter for tonight. Okay, other ones.
We're going to do appreciations?
Yeah, some appreciations. Carol, you got some?
Let's see. The good health of the family. Sounds overly simple, but it's an appreciation that was acknowledged. So that's pretty nice.
Oh.
Here's a good one. Being able to get support from family and friends anytime with technology.
I appreciate that I understand the difference between being a producer and a consumer of happiness, and in particular, the right type of consumer.
Wow.
That's an interesting
one. That is pretty cool.
Appreciation. Okay, how about now we get to gratitudes, which is recognizing the kind act of others. And again, we're going through our system at admirablefriends.org. It's a free subscription, anybody that wants to join, and people are able to enter into their journal acts of generosity, appreciation, gratitudes that they recognize, and then decide whether they want to share it anonymously with the group. So some of these are kept to themselves. There's a lot here that is, I know in my journal, I'm looking through a lot of my journal here, it says only me, and then there's some things that I share with. Okay, let's look at the gratitude list. You guys got one you like?
Alex, why don't you go ahead?
Got one here is the action is being hired for a job. And the reflection was that it was nice to be wanted sometimes by others who know really nothing about you, but what your professional merits are alone.
Huh. Mm. Let's see. Gratitude. Encouraging me to go out of my comfort zone. There's something that resonates with me. And the reflection on this was enjoy trying a new class that I've procrastinated on for months.
Yeah, so someone pushed someone into the class.
That's pretty nice.
That is nice.
And you get to, you find out so much when you go beyond your comfort zone. I know that I hesitate on that a lot, but boy, I can empathize with that, knowing that on the other side, you go, well, that's pretty cool. I'm so glad I did it.
I'm listening to me. I trust their intentions. I know they went out of their way. It's inspiring and consistent action that I'm receiving from my loved one. Okay. We've pretty much covered it. And again, anyone that wants to participate in that, it is done journaling. It's those who, those admirable friends that have chosen to practice and record these things on a regular basis. Of course, help with being generous and thinking that way. Okay, the body of the show tonight is craving. Let's start with...
Well, the question was on the blast email.
Go ahead.
In bold letters, what is the difference between wanting and craving? ? And then the subject, it says, share your thoughts on, can you give us examples of what you consider a want is versus something you crave for. The second one was with each example, wants and cravings, do you think it leads you to stress or happiness? And so that was the email that went out that started the whole conversation.
Yeah.
So, but kind of rolling back, when we were talking about it last week, and for those that listen to us and know when we talk about, there are certain ideal mind qualities that we talk about and we say, oh, this is, you know, people tend to shy away or run in the other direction when we talk about, well, first of all, restraint. You know, when they hear the word restraint, they go in the opposite direction and say, okay, I'm going to turn this one off tonight. It's just too much to, the connotation of what it is too much to handle sometimes. And so when I see craving, I feel the same way, Alex. You know,
I was going to say, yeah, the restraint, I think for people that were finding it a little bit tough to grapple with restraint or didn't want to, I think it'll become a little clearer when talking about the craving and wanting, because we're really looking at specific acts, that restraint, I think we'll be able to see tonight when we talk about it, that it can be used for a lot of good things in right. helping through a lot of wants and cravings. So,
and now I was saying earlier in the week that I equate wanting and craving are on the same level for me. You know, I think they can be interchangeable. But I did find with a lot of our emails that came in that a lot of the emails separated wants from craving, and they put them on a different value level, which I thought was very interesting.
Hmm. Yeah.
So, in that respect, that's when I said that the it was like a trick question at the beginning, you know. But it did stump a few people. They said, well, this was kind of difficult. I had to really think about it. So,
I mean, this is wanting is something we all take for granted, right? This is what we do. I mean, with the human desire is what the basic fuel that runs us. And I think to a certain extent, there's a lot of people that don't want to come to grips with a craving. It almost feels like an addiction. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and where I kind of saw the wanting versus craving, while I do believe the two terms to be more or less synonymous, the craving for me is more of a really kind of like stress, where it's that external feeling or that internal feeling you get from from that wanting. I think it's for me, it's more of that I can feel the craving, right? The wanting, not necessarily, but I just kind of put that craving term on it when it gets to that recognition of it.
Well, perhaps it's more of a gross form. When we hear the word craving, it means to us more of a gross form of wanting versus a subtle form of
more
wanting.
More obvious.
More
the
obvious.
Craving is more obvious.
Exactly. But it's still in that same bucket. And it's not, it's like we're getting to here about whether the label is a negative versus a positive. It's still synonymous, in my opinion, with wanting. And we can talk about the way in which wanting can be both skillful and unskillful.
Yeah, well, let's start by first throwing out that proverbial need versus want.
Mm.
Let's talk a little bit about that before we actually get into skillfulness of the want or not. You know, when you hear need versus want, what do you think of, Carol?
Need versus want. I guess it's just the amount, the quantity. Like I need, I guess wanting is like, it seems like an abundance of like, I want it all, or I want. Whereas
yeah,
need
want,
is what
you
exactly
want it for
do you
its
need?
Sake. You want it for its sake. Whereas need, you have to more or less take inventory of what you have.
Sure.
Right? Wanting could be considered independent of what I have. I just want it because I want it.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Need takes into two dimensions.
What do you need? You know,
yes.
When you stop and look, what exactly do you really need?
Yeah,
you have to look at your own, you have to take inventory of what you got.
Exactly. I think it's a refined look on wanting something. You drill down a little bit to determine it, whether it's a need or if it's still just a want. So you have to drill down a little bit and assess really does this want tie in to my overall objectives and my goals? And if it's going to be skillful. And then I think it becomes a need because it moves into this bucket of this is going to help me get to my goal and my objectives. So it's a layer beneath the want is what I find.
Yeah. Well, the last 2 weeks we covered both of the common qualities. If you remember, we covered patience as well as equanimity.
We did.
Now, if you were really weak on patience and equanimity, do you think your wants would be out of line?
Just a tad.
Right? So the way I look at it, the wanting is really the fuel, and it really is the gauge to tell us how we're doing on the rest of these mind qualities. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Think about it. If you're not generous, if your generosity rating is low for yourself,
mm-hmm.
where's your wanting?
On the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, that's a great question. Where's your wanting is a really good question. If people have, you know, 5 or 10 minutes alone and they want to, you know, give themselves a question to kind of contemplate, where's my wanting? And kind of just look at the direction in which you're drawn to and then kind of just start down that path. That's a really good question.
Yeah, it really requires discernment. It really requires us to discern below our superficial wants, you know, because it's so easy to want everything, and, you know, the advertisers are convincing us that we need it and we, you know, we have to have it. So it's so easy to act emotionally around a want.
Do you think there's a relationship or correlation between wanting things relationship-wise versus wanting things material-wise? Like,
yeah, we had this question Thursday night at Fort Worth Meditation.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. I find myself wanting people, like, why can't they be this way?
Right.
People. But I don't consider myself wanting for material things.
Right. Now, let me ask you something. Does that let you off the hook of being greedy?
Not at all. It's still a want. But I just, it just
no,
kind
no,
of...
Yeah, I didn't hear you say that you're still greedy. You said it's still a want. We do associate greed with the material side. Come on.
Yes. But I'm talking about wanting a person versus wanting a material thing.
Yeah, it's
you know,
the same
so I know it's wanting. I know it's a want. But what I'm saying is I find that I speak when I want things to be different. It's more in terms of people like not meeting my expectations,
right,
and wanting them to be, why can't they act this way, or why can't they just follow the rules kind of thing, you know, versus I want a new car, or I want another pair of shoes, or I want a purse, you know.
And do you think either one has a greater or less extent on stress?
No, I guess it's just my preference leaning towards one, I'm trying to drill down and find out why it is I lean towards, I don't know why.
Why you lean towards more the intangible relationship or situations versus the tangible?
Yeah.
Probably, you know, just the way you've been conditioned. Mm. Weren't you low in the pecking order? Weren't you in the middle child area there?
You think that has something
easy
to do with it?
Easy.
I'm not kidding.
I don't know, Alex. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, I'm going
to
stay
away
from
Alex,
that
one. But Alex, do you understand what I'm saying with regard to that? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it's conditioning. But I think
yeah.
We can go back on a treasure chest look all the way back to the beginning of time. But the beauty of this program is it doesn't matter what happened 50
no,
years ago.
Because it's
what
all
matters now and its impact on stress. So
yeah,
the real
exactly
issue is what's happening now? What are we craving? What are we wanting? What's skillful? What's unskillful? What causes stress? That's the context of the discussion.
But I do
because
that's
what's helpful about this program is that we have a context.
Right.
We're not trying to psychologically
I just
want
to say,
figure out why.
To go forward,
right,
it often is good to reflect, not necessarily in the attempt to change anything from the past, but to give yourself a fighting chance going forward. You know, you've got to take some time to reflect on your own actions from the past. So.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. But I think, in the context of whether those actions caused you stress or not, not just for psychological reasons. You know, I like chocolate and somebody else likes vanilla. I wonder why. You know, there's lots of things that we could be thinking about that aren't related to the main issues of hand, of stress and relief and happiness.
You kind of rolled into, because we're going to get into kind of the quality of the wants and talking about really skillful versus unskillful. And, you know, I keep getting asked from a lot of people I work with and some who aren't familiar with the terminology because we use it so much when we start talking about skillful versus unskillful, right? And what does that skillful mean is the question. It was a brilliant question for somebody who wants to go deeper, and I like when I hear these kinds of questions because it means I've got them engaged in a real conversation where what really skillful means. When we say, we prefer for our wanting to be more skillful versus unskillful, and the answer I had given him was that when we determine something to be skillful or not, we've done our due diligence. We've tested it. We've tested to see if it's causing more stress or not. And that is the barometer at which we gauge something to be skillful or not. It's a very simple
right
test. But
well,
it's
not just stressful to us, but it's stressful to others, right?
Exactly, stressful to ourselves
or
others, because we say skillful and unskillful, and I get the kind of look like, "Wow, you make it sound so easy." Well, it only sounds easy if you've done the testing to put that label on it, and so it doesn't just stop with whether or not you say yes, it's skillful or not. You've got to put it to the test to really be sure whether or not it's working for you. So,
right, and that determination that you talked about, Alex, of really looking at, you know, living reliably happy is basically living with less stress and more intentional choosing of our actions that lead us, cause and effect, to less stress, right? For less stress in others.
Oh,
so
yeah,
it's almost like you have to be very intentional about all your actions. Well, again, getting back to intention, there's where your desire starts. It starts with a thought, and the desire starts, and then it goes to an actual action. So you've got to back up this truck and get to that intention and what's driving it. And then at that point, when you actually, like you say, Alex, simply say, is this want skillful or unskillful? Assuming you already know that and you spent some time practicing, then you are at the point of the qualitative side of that want. You're making the choice by asking the question, is this want skillful or unskillful? That's the shorthand. The longhand is this want leading me to stress and or others to stress? Or is it not? And that's the thing you think about while you're intentionally desiring things, right? So it kind of that broad brush kind of gets us into the need discussion, which we just talked about. You know, for instance, if you've got three dresses in your closet and you really don't need a fourth, right? So you'll turn around and say, do I need this dress? Is it going to lead me to stress? Well, that brings you right back to, do I really, you know, what if I bought a fourth dress, what kind of stress would I incur? You tell me, Carol. I don't have any dresses in my closet.
Yeah, I was going to say, where is this going?
What's the fourth dress?
I was going to say, yes, that would lead to stress if you got another dress.
Why is it stress? Why is it stressful? Give me some examples.
If you wanted it just for the sake of having it or buying it or just because it was on sale and you just can't pass up a great deal, but you didn't necessarily need it.
So where's the stress? So there's the craving. I'm a want a dress. I don't necessarily need it. Now,
well, there could be the guilt associated with buying it when you know you didn't need it.
Okay.
Spending the money that you didn't have originally.
There you go.
That you didn't
need
it. Now I'm trying to find a place to wear it because you bought it and it's going to be sitting in your closet.
Get a bigger closet because your closet's not big enough to hold it. Number four.
Yeah.
Right? Have to send it out every once in a while for cleaning because it's
dry clean only?
Yeah, dry clean only.
Hey, buddy, correct me, though, on this. Just wanting the dress, though, is not to say whether it is not a good or bad judgment, right? There's still another layer to go, right? So
well,
to simply say
the judgment,
you want a dress.
No,
wanting a dress
point,
is not
you,
a bad
if you were
thing.
No, it's not a bad thing, but if you were intentional about it before you purchased it, would basically say, I'm going to consider this dress, whether it's going to bring me any stress to myself or others. So that takes you to the next level of discussion in your head. Do I really need this dress? Right? Because if it's going to lead you to stress, you don't need it.
Correct.
Right? And again, what happens is most of the time we just buy the item and then we wonder why down the road we're stressful when, first of all, it's not just one dress we're buying. There's choices we're making all day long without discernment that just get piled on. Each time we make these choices, we increase the probability of making them again. So we just keep buying stuff we don't need. Can I finish?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm waving my hands up in the air, everybody.
The conversation you have when you go through these wants. So you're going into the store. You have to set aside time to drive over to the store, right? So these are all choices being made on the way over. You're having discussions in your head about whether you really need this or don't need.
You might be driving too fast to get the dress, and you're going to get in a car accident because you didn't think about what you were doing.
Ticket.
About when you get there, you know, are you willing to sacrifice a dress maybe for a different price dress? So it can go on and on.
Okay, so I just came up with this thought. Obviously, there are many of us making that choice based on craving and wants or else they wouldn't come up with the phrase buyer's remorse.
Right.
Right?
Right.
I mean, we wouldn't be remorseful afterwards if we used skillful means to determine whether we needed it or not, or else we wouldn't be feeling that guilt and remorse afterwards.
The whole consumer society runs on this thing, and it's just gotten way out of hand. We're consuming a lot more than we're producing. Look at the numbers.
Have you ever gone in a store, picked up an item, walked around half of the store, getting ready to head out, and just put it on some random shelf? That's the pause we're talking about. Is that last little, I'm going to save myself and say, gosh, you know, I really don't need it. I don't need it. This is going to go down the wrong path. You know, because you've spent half your time, you're walking around the store with this one item, you're looking at all this stuff, but you're having a conversation about that. Not even looking at the rest of the stuff. You're just... And when you look at that from a different view and kind of take yourself away from it, you look at how silly it really is, and then you really say, well, this clearly is not something I need if I'm spending so much time and energy trying to convince myself. If you're having to convince yourself, I would really assess the needs of it.
Right. But most of this is you don't have your mind in a stable position where you're really assessing mm-hmm. these choices in advance. So you're making them as they're going, and then you're having to kind of deal with the consequences of it. And like I said, if you try to track your stress to just one craving, it's more complicated than that. You know, if cause and effect mm-hmm. of our choices were that simple, we'd all have happiness figured out by now. It's a complex
set habits would be changed on a daily basis. Absolutely.
Right. What makes habits unchangeable is the fact that we keep making choices, running up our choices, running up our habits, and then they just increase the probability of happening again. And unless we build skills to slow that process down and begin looking at the choices we're making and the impact it's having on our life, like you said initially, Alex, we have to put these in the context of, first of all, an overall life plan. It's essential. If mm-hmm. you don't have an overall life plan, then all you're wanting has no context. You're actually
an accident looking for a place
to happen.
Exactly. You're just kind of spinning your tires in some mud there. You know, you've got the impression that you're moving, but it's just kind of stagnant. We're not really pointing it anywhere, which that's where the real impact and the real transformation happens, is when we can actually direct these sorts of actions.
So. Yeah. And just think about your whole life, if it was lived as to just wanting and meeting, going from one want to another and having that sugar high, that want, then going for the next want. Is that what life is? I mean, when you're all done.
It can be.
It can be.
It most certainly can be. But,
like anything else, it's balance. It's not, and it's not to say, oh, go out in the forest and want nothing. That's not what we're talking about.
No, it's a balance.
The issue is how do we balance this?
Well, that's wanting as well. I mean, that's just a different level. You've just, like I said, you've convinced yourself somehow that... That is the, you know, that's
wanting
nothing. Exactly.
You wear a badge around yourself and say, I'm special because I don't want anything.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, but there's a skillful want right there. When you say, I want to improve my chances of making a skillful choice.
Again, how are you going to do that without an overall plan?
Well, that's what we're going to talk about tonight.
Right.
That's the trickle down waterfall that we're seeing here, is that it starts with the want. We drill down to the need. But then we quickly see that that need has to be associated with a higher determination of a long-term, goal, and so it, and so hopefully that's what these sort of questions and these sort of activities can lead us to, is if we haven't made one of those determinations, that you'll see it through going through these steps. While you can look at them, if you want to direct them and make them something real, you got to point them somewhere.
It's really opportune that we're talking about the craving and wanting tonight before next week when we talk about setting up our determinations and things like that.
Yeah, it's actually, you're right.
It's really kind of amazing that you mentioned that. It's like, you know what, this is pretty cool that we're talking about it, because it really sets the table for what we're going to talk about next week. It kind of gives us a little advance notice.
But you talk about not wanting to talk about restraint or equanimity. Not want to talk about curtailing want, you know, we have to be careful. We could be looked at as an anti-American show.
Wow.
You know, well,
we're, really, I think it's
not
I
a
think
popular
it's,
discussion. It's not a popular discussion, okay? But it's a necessary
it's not
one
popular,
to take care of.
Exactly. It's not popular. I think it's just kind of... it gets a bad stigma on it if you want to talk about these sorts of topics and terms and things like that. But, you know, there's balance to everything. And that's really what we're talking about, is balancing the want more towards the skillful.
Alex, let's take a break with that in mind. The second half of the show is going to be how. The question will be just what you said. How do we balance our wants? Second half of the show. So let's take a break.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
And we're back.
We're back.
Part two of Wants versus Craving.
And we wanted to get back to the show.
It's the big cage match between Wants versus Craving.
Need to get back to the show.
Yeah, I need
to get back.
But we took the break, Alice. You mentioned the issue of balance, and like anything else, what is it we're trying to balance? At least I'm going to suggest that the balance that we're trying to achieve is balancing between external and internal wants.
Yes.
Okay. And let's just put it, external will be all of our sensual wants through our senses, including our thoughts and ideas, wanting to think certain ways, wanting to spend more time thinking about pleasant thoughts and hopes and dreams, that level of wanting, all the sensual, including the mindset. And then the inner is the want to develop inner qualities, that desire to develop inner qualities of mind and character, the 10 ideal mind qualities that we've been covering in the show. That would be the inner. So I'm going to suggest as a working discussion for the second half of the show that balance is balancing those two.
Okay.
And the first thing I'm going to ask Carol and you right on the spot is what percentage of your wants do you think are inner during the day versus outer versus external?
Oh, my gosh.
Give me a percentage.
Oh, I don't. Well, I'm sure whatever said, I'm going to underestimate it grossly. But I know that all my wants are external. I clearly don't think I have a balance.
Okay. Well, what do you think the ratio is?
Oh, I'm embarrassed to say.
Okay. Alice?
I think 70-30, as I think about it. Would be
okay. I like what his was.
No.
I was going to say around.
This is the price or right. You can't just vote $1 and beat me.
Okay. I was going to say 75-25, So that was really my initial thought. And I thought, boy, that sounds pretty bad.
I'm going to take a provocative position. I'm going to say 99-1.
Okay.
I was being kind,
99% of my wants are for satisfying my senses, including my thoughts and hopes and dreams, and then 1% goes towards building the inner mind qualities.
Wow, and I know how much you're geared towards doing your inner mind qualities, so now I'm really out in the cold.
It figures a maximizer would do 99-1. I'll tell you that.
I honestly think that's where the one is 1% more than I used to have.
Well, that's what I was saying. I'm thinking, probably 10 years ago, I was right around maybe 95.5, and I think I've been at a steady 5% increase over the last decade and brought it up. I think, participating in this kind of conversation and involving myself in a lot of different avenues. And since getting into the 10 mind qualities, I've seen a huge increase in it. And so as we spoke about being generous to ourselves earlier in the show, the 30 is being generous to myself.
Well, the other thing I want to mention too is that the balance, I don't think, is just between the outer and the inner. I also think when it comes to just the outer wants, there's balance within outer wants.
Sure.
To the effect that you have discernment, and we'll get to that, to the fact that you're using discernment on your outer wants, they don't get into that craving, that uncomfortable craving. And again, the reason why the 1% is so important, or the 2%, or whatever you're doing on a contemplative practice, is because not only are you building an alternative want, an inner, more intrinsic want, you're also building skills, including discernment, to take out into the outer world and make better choices. Okay, anytime that you're building the inner mind qualities, in particular the calming qualities, all of them go right down the line. Determination, you're putting your wants into an overall plan,
mm-hmm.
right? Discernment, you're making better choices because you're drilling down. Instead of just making superficial wants, you're looking into the content of what you want. Take food, for instance, right?
Yeah.
You're looking at the labels. You're discerning the labels. You're looking into your macronutrients, your micronutrients. Discernment. Mm-hmm. Now take goodwill. The fact that you're wishing yourself well and others well to make more skillful decisions is, again, helping you towards not wanting as much. And get to your generosity, all your giving qualities. Those are all geared towards wanting less.
Is it wanting less, or is it wanting less, or is it really more quality of the want?
Or is it wanting better?
Well, they're still wanting less. You still want less because at any given point, you're either giving or wanting. So don't forget, when you're actually giving out of an act of true generosity, that's not a want.
Okay.
It's a give. Look at want and giving as two different arrows. Once something's coming my way or it's going out.
Correct.
I'm pushing energy towards others.
Yeah.
Right? Or towards myself. Or I'm trying to get something out of a situation. Would be the wanting side. So you've got multi dimensions of balance. You've got balance, but I think the leverage, Alex, is in the inner mind qualities because it builds all those 10 by practicing. Even if it's 1% or 2%, you're building leverage into the equation to make better choices on the, because let's face it, we're not monks. You know, we're trying to live in a society where we're part of family, we're part of work.
We're engaging in the outside world
of the senses. You're going on a vacation. It's important to enjoy your vacation. So the real issue is not doing this to leave the world. You're doing this in order to build skills to better have less stress in the world you live in.
Exactly. I think you used an example maybe a few weeks ago when you were talking about the lens in which we look at the external world. And that's really the internal side, is that kind of, you know, that microscope, that fine-tuning knob where we really get to bring into focus a lot of the external environment around us, being able to focus and to see a little bit more clear. Those inner qualities do a really good job of refining it. And so we, give ourselves a better opportunity or put ourselves in a better position in an external sense. So the leverage is there. It's not to say that it's the easy work, but that it is the leverage.
Yes. And anything that will build discernment will help us make better choices. Anything that will quiet the mind will get us closer to intention, which is basically the thought that precedes the action. So the closer we can get to our thinking, right, about what we're doing before we actually have that action, that want, and the closer we get to it, as well as the level that we are able to discern whether we truly need it or not, or whether it brings stress to us or not, the better choices that are going to be made. So there's nothing wrong with the wanting. It's where it's pointed. And also, where it's pointed is a function of how well you can't point a want. It's like trying to close the door after the horse left the barn. If you're already buying something, your decision to buy that was way before that happened.
Correct.
Okay? So you've got to develop qualities of mind that get you to the point of thought prior to buying, where you can actually consider this in terms of intention. Do I really need this or don't I need this? Is this a good use of my time and money?
Well, we're being inundated like at rapid pace via media and marketing or whatever.
Well, do you think an advertiser wants you to discern what I just said?
Absolutely not.
Exactly.
It's got to be impulse buying.
It's impulse buying. They don't want you to get to the need part of figuring this thing out. They're saying, we want to keep, I want to keep you right in the want and make you have a snap judgment and go get this thing or whatever it is. If you go into the need, then you immediately cut down your buying potential by 50% immediately.
Yeah. I would say you're not in the target market.
You're not. They don't want people that have to look into whether they need it or not. They want people wanting it, craving it.
And
absolutely.
Any advertisers listen, you know, we don't have a problem having an advertiser on our show that say, well, this is not the right show for us. Because they're educating people on choice. They're asking to be quiet about their choices, and they're asking to think about them and really discern whether you need it or you don't need it. And again, the craving, try not to tie every bit of stress to that actual craving. You got to kind of work your way through it. And in my case, the example I gave earlier in that audio clip I put on the website is I feel stress. It mostly takes a form of anxiousness in my practice. And, you know, when I feel anxious in my body, I begin to look backwards to the rearview mirror because I know it's already too late. That there's something that happened before. And 9 times out of 10, it has to do with just the general pace at which I'm operating. You know, I can't really come to the exact craving that I had. I just know that I was moving too fast. So that's where my practice is right now. And it's a call to action to slow down right at that point. So I work my breath. And again, so I'm not making poor choices going forward. To a certain extent, I've already made the bad choice that got me feeling the way I'm feeling. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. But what I wanted to kind of caution us on, because we're discussing a lot about material purchasing and things like that, but the wanting, as I said earlier, where I'm concerned, can also happen with people in relationships.
Yes.
So, you know, I find that anxious feeling or that impatience coming when I want somebody to respond differently than what I expect them to do.
And that could be as simple as just wanting to get through a line at the Starbucks quicker, right?
Sure.
Or wanting somebody at work to produce a report for you on time when they said they were going to do it the night before. I think.
Or impatience with myself because I want things to happen quicker than when it's supposed to be happening.
Yes. Yeah, I was just going to – that's a good point. You know, to bring the talents back full fold, the maximizer in me wants things not to be just good, but to be great. And if I, and that's a want, I want things to be great, not just good. And if I let that want, go unskillful, there is a pretty big snowball effect of stress and anxiety that comes with that. And that's been, in my experience, that's been tested and proven up. And so I have to be vigilant about tempering that talent to be more on the mature side versus that raw side to where it's just, you know, it's gone crazy.
And what practices do you do to temper that?
That's a very good question. Well, I guess the overriding practice would be the ability to catch it as it's happening. So creating space and time daily to work on that skill. I think it's first you have to create a skill that's going to allow you to see it as it's happening.
First though, you use the word your maximizer, but you use the help of the Gallic Strength Finder to actually identify that behavior trait, that tendency in you, right? So it gave you a cue card, so you're already on your watch. You're watching maximizer, right?
Yeah, I'm watching it. That's a great thing about that those strengths assessment. They put verbiage and they put content to kind of that conversation going on upstairs and a lot of those feelings
That's a practice there. I didn't want you to go so quickly over it.
Correct.
Because that's a practice anybody can go take a $10 assessment and basically get their personality behavior patterns pretty well, you know, common traits. Put them onto our website for no charge, and they're going to get per talent theme both the raw and the mature form of it.
Yeah,
right?
if you Yeah, if you haven't taken an assessment, the strengths one is very good. The verbiage is good. A lot of people have done it, so you can create a conversation. But it does begin that pointing you in the right direction.
Yeah, and it starts you looking. It's a cue card and say, well, look, here's the downside to the Mac. You know, the good side of the maximizer, obviously, is you want things to be great. So you're, you know, on a project team, you're a great advocate of not just good, but to do things really great. But that same greatness, that desire to be great, could be that, you know, like you said, you want a situation to be perfect, so you're picky.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an unskillful use of that want, right? And so key practice is identifying behavior traits and writing them down and being intentional about watching them during the day. That's all part of the reflection process.
Yep, there you go. It's the three R's, the reflect, relate, and renew, right there. You go right through that chain of those three steps.
Start by reflecting on your own personal behavior, then relate it and have a conversation with somebody else about it, an admirable friend. And then you ultimately move to the renew practice, where you can include more practices to slow down.
Yep, very practical, applicative stuff.
So that would be a sequence that I would suggest to our listening audience, that, mm-hmm. you know, start by getting your strengths done, understand your behavior patterns, watch them, look at the raw side, because the raw side really brings you back to that contemplation journal we had,
mm-hmm.
because you're trying to find out the allure in your actions, which is your craving. It's the subject matter we're talking about. Your craving is the allure. It's the same thing.
It's amazing how all of this just ties all in together. For those that have been listening over the last year, it's just like one big fabric. All the threads are weaving in to make a pattern here. And
let's start the email process now that we've really hashed out this craving and wanting. And let's see what our listeners have said. Alex, you want to start?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Let me just say thank you in advance for those of you who sent in. This is a really big part of our show, and really the crux of our show is wanting to have dialogue and having lots of people engage in a conversation. So thank you. Dear admirable friends, the following is my response to a want versus a craving. A want is something I may wish for, desire, or even hope for. As an example, I hope I do well on my driver's test tomorrow, or I would love to buy that new outfit, or I wish I had enough money to see that new Broadway show. These are simply wants. Whereas a craving is far different than a want. As an example, I really love that expensive watch. I can't afford it, but I could put it on a credit card. I've got to have it. Or everyone is going on that cruise. I'll beg, borrow, or steal to go. These are cravings that may cause anxiety, stress, or even dangerous to one's health. You can rationalize the situation of a want in many ways, as, oh, well, what is to be is to be, or I guess everyone wants something or other. No harm done. I'll be listening to your response, admirable friends, as I do enjoy your show.
So, okay. So this writer was saying there's a difference between the want and the craving.
Yeah, from what I can take from this writing, the craving was that extra step, it looks like, where it kind of goes past the wanting of it from a conceptual point.
It's almost like you're blinded to it. It's like takes on a life of its own.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It just goes into that unskillful realm of the want, is where it becomes more of a, as this person would say, it becomes more of a rationalization and conversation that's gone run away from you. It's out of your hands. It's highly emotional and not so reflective.
I'd like to also kind of pass on to the writer that we're talking about an either or, looking at each item. What looks like a gross want, this writer appears to put in the bucket of a craving, and what looks like a smaller want, wouldn't you say, is in the want bucket versus the craving bucket?
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Those little small wants can have a cumulative effect on stress.
They can, but also those small wants haven't been determined to be skillful or not yet. They are kind of just floating up and out there. So, like, I would love to buy that new outfit. Well, haven't determined whether or not that's skillful or not. So it's fine to say that you want it. Now we got to go a little bit deeper. And when you go deeper, you might find that it's more raving.
Okay. Carol.
Another one? I know we're short on time.
I do. Okay. Okay. So this one said, cravings can be the root of stress. Example. Yeah. My week is very busy. I have many items on my plate, and the one that stresses me the most is budgeting for 2015 with my company. I came to that conclusion because I wanted it done by Friday. Once I recognized that this was the specific root of my stress, I called the CFO and told him I could complete by next week. I explained I had higher priorities that needed my attention first, and he understood. So I do think when we take the time to understand our stress, so we can reduce it fairly quickly on our terms. So that was a very skillful way.
Oh, they've got the solution. They got the problem.
Exactly.
Everything in one.
I mean, they saw the whole picture. You know, wanting it to be done by a certain time or a certain way, and then realizing the limitations, and then putting actions into place that curtailed it.
And this is an example of not a material want, like you were saying, Carol. This is right up your alley, which you were saying most of your cravings are in that category. This person's hitting that one right there.
Yep.
Excellent. Let me get one other one. Let's at least get one more in here before we close the show off.
Okay.
I want everyone to get along. This is tied to my harmony being one of my top strengths. So this person has, like you and I, Alex, has done their strengths. They're mm-hmm. tied in, so they know their harmony is wanting everyone to get along. And this, because conflict makes me uncomfortable and it causes me stress.
Mm-hmm.
I want everyone to be responsible and pull their weight. This is tied to my responsibility theme. When other people do not follow through on their commitments, it upsets me and causes me stress. Let's take both of those. The first one is harmony. Conflict makes me uncomfortable and it causes me stress. That's one aspect, right? That's one craving for harmony. But what about when you're what about trying to crave everyone to get along when you can't control everyone?
Right. That's
more craving as well. So there's two sides to that.
And of course, it brings stress to both sides of the table, doesn't it? To the person that wants the conflict to stop or whatever, and then or to everybody get along, and then.
But you can see the person's struggle.
The stress put on the other people to. She doesn't like
I feel stressful when people aren't in harmony.
Yeah.
When in harmony, but I'm also stressful when I try to arrange all the deck chairs in the Titanic.
Yeah. Right? It's the raw versus mature, the I need peace versus I bring peace.
Yes.
That goes along with harmony.
Yeah.
And I can see that as well with the responsibility, where it's tied to one of it, where I want, you know, others to be, you know, taking on their responsibility versus one's own responsibility in the whole equation.
Right.
If we take on too much or we take on an unskillful amount of responsibility, which I know all too much of. So
right. So again, having the person's strengths done in this particular case is helpful because they can be coached, they can work through some of the behavior patterns, they can see it coming, identify with it. And then as they build the inner world of the inner mind qualities, they're building more intentionality around their decision making mm-hmm. beforehand. So they get an explanation of why they do what they do, begin to reflect on it, but the ultimate renewal will take place when they develop some of the inner qualities that start helping us with patience and discernment to make those choices.
I really like this topic.
Yeah, this
tonight.
Topic
Boy,
is wide
this,
open. We could do the whole show. The whole radio show could be on this topic.
Just flew.
You know, but we are done. We're done with time, and we've got to go on. It was a great topic, and I really appreciate the input from the, like you say, Alex, these people who write in. It's just great to give us this information.
We enjoy reading it, so keep sending them along. And comments too, hello@admirablefriends.org.
Yes, keep the comments going. Next week we'll be on determination. So anything in advance, you can give us a determination. Appreciate it. Until next week, thank you, folks, and we'll see you then.
Good night, everybody.
Have a great week.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.